Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, May 28th, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. Senate Republicans block legislation that would create a commission to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Vote in the Senate, 54 to 35. It was six short of the 60 votes needed to advance the bill. Six Republicans did vote yes, but 35 voted no. Senators also agree to postpone finishing up a $200 billion science and technology investment bill designed to help the U.S. compete with China. This after Republicans pushed for more time to consider amendments and forced a nearly all-night session Thursday. President Joe Biden joining Virginia Governor Ralph Northam to celebrate the state's lifting of COVID-19 restrictions just in time for the long Memorial Day holiday weekend. President touting the strengthening economy as more Americans get vaccinated. Vice President Kamala Harris making history as the first woman to give the commencement address at the U.S. Naval Academy. She describes the coronavirus pandemic as a turning point in history, much like the stock market crash in 1929, the 9/11 attacks in 2001, and it requires a new approach to the nation's defense strategy. And former President Donald Trump calling former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan a curse to the Republican Party after Ryan tells a crowd at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, "If the conservative cause depends on the populist appeal of one personality or of second-rate imitations, then we're not going anywhere." Top story at the Associated Press website, Senate Republicans on Friday blocked creation of a bipartisan panel to study the January 6th attack on the Capitol in a show of party loyalty to former President Donald Trump, aiming to shift the political focus away from the violent insurrection by his GOP supporters. The procedural vote needed 60 yes votes to pass. It got 54.
On this vote, the yeas are 54, the nays are 35. Three-fifths of the senators duly chosen and sworn not having voted in the affirmative, the motion is not agreed to.
Six Republicans did vote yes: Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Bill Cassidy, Rob Portman, and Ben Sasse. 11 senators did not vote, 9 Republicans and 2 Democrats. One of the Republicans who did not vote, Pat Toomey, said that he would have voted yes and that he missed the vote due to a family commitment. Ahead of the vote, Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar urging support.
As chair of the Rules Committee, I implore my colleagues to vote for this commission. On January 6th, we all walked over that broken glass. We all saw the spray paint on the walls. We all stood huddled together in shelter. And most of us, the vast majority of us, Democrats and Republicans, voted to uphold our democracy that night, late into the evening. But it doesn't end there. I give to you the words of slain officers Brian Sicknick's mother. Ordinary woman who never has been involved in politics, now forced to do extraordinary things and lobby members of this body to simply get to the truth. She said this: not having a January 6th commission to look into exactly what occurred is a slap in the faces of all the officers who did their jobs that day. For months, national security experts have called for a bipartisan commission. Yesterday, the Department of Homeland Security, former secretaries from the Bush and Obama administrations, Chertoff, Ridge, Napolitano, Johnson, all called for this commission. This commission is modeled exactly after the gold standard of investigations and recommendations, the 9/11 Commission. It is modeled in the words of how the staff is chosen. It is modeled in the words of getting to the bottom of something and getting something done. But yet, so many of our colleagues, sadly, on the other side of the aisle are refusing to move on this. Colleagues, we owe it to the heroic Capitol Police, to the first responders, to the staff members who sat in closets for hours and hours and hours, to the police officer who was called the N-word 15 times and then sat in the rotunda and looked at another officer and said, "Is this America?" We owe it to them that put themselves in harm's way to protect the Capitol and the sacred democratic process. Inaction is not an option. And no, the report we are doing that I'm so proud of with Senator Peters and Senator Portman and Senator Blunt, which will come out shortly, that is about an immediate response and bills we have to pass and things we have to do and mistakes that were made. It's an important report, and we're proud of our work. But it is no substitute for a 9/11-style commission. And I implore our colleagues to vote with us to get this done.
Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat from Minnesota, chair of the Rules and Administration Committee on the Senate floor before that vote, and the bill was blocked from proceeding. One of the Senate Republicans who voted yes, Bill Cassidy, put out a statement that reads, "The investigations will happen with or without Republicans. To ensure the investigations are fair, impartial, and focused on facts, Republicans need to be involved." There's also this from Politico about another Republican senator who voted yes, Susan Collins. The article reads that the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Susan Collins agreed on her changes to a proposed commission investigating January 6th Capitol riot that didn't stop a testy exchange from erupting on the Senate floor in the middle of Friday's make-or-break vote. An incredulous Collins shook her head after the Senate Majority Leader set up the doomed roll call on the commission by asking Republicans about to block it, "What are you afraid of, the truth?" As the angered Collins saw it, Schumer had made an overtly partisan appeal that omitted her efforts to cut a bipartisan deal on the insurrection inquiry. "Totally unbelievable," the Maine GOP senator told Schumer on the floor. He gave a subsequent speech endorsing her changes, but it was too late. Republicans had already filibustered the bill. You can read more at Politico.com. The House passed this bill last week. Today, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi put out a statement beginning that Mitch McConnell, referring to the Senate Minority Leader, asked Senate Republicans to do him a personal favor and vote against the January 6th commission. In doing so, Mitch McConnell asked them to be complicit in his undermining of the truth of January 6th. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell questioned about this bill by reporters on Tuesday.
"Are there any changes that could be made to the House's January 6th commission bill that would win your support, or are you opposed to the concept altogether?"
Yeah, let's review where we are. Our Democratic friends have all voted to impeach the president already based on what happened January the 6th. And they actually all voted to impeach him earlier. So I think it's pretty clear they have a formed opinion about former President Trump expressing unified support for impeachment, not once, but twice. With regard to future security, Senator Blunt, who's standing right by me, and Senator Portman are involved in bipartisan work through the regular order in two Senate committees to come up with a report on how to prevent this from happening again. With regard to those who encroached upon the Capitol, I think the last count is there are 445 pending cases. It's a top priority for the new Attorney General. They're pursuing all of those people vigorously, and bringing them to justice. So what would an additional report be about? I think at the heart of this recommendation by the Democrats is that they would like to continue to debate things that occurred in the past. They'd like to continue to litigate the former president into the future. We think the American people going forward and in the fall of 22 ought to focus on what this administration is doing for the country and what the clear choice is that we have made to oppose most of these initiatives. So I think this is a purely political exercise that adds nothing to the sum total of information. It doesn't allow anyone to get away with anything. All of these aspects of it are being dealt with in one way or another already.
The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, with reporters on Tuesday. With the bill that would create that commission to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol blocked today, the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said at a news conference that senators should be prepared for another vote sometime in the future.
Senate Republicans, at the personal request of Leader McConnell, continue their brazen attempts to whitewash the attack of January 6th by filibustering the House-passed bipartisan January 6th commission, even though, as I said, Speaker Pelosi and I agreed to changes proposed by Senator Collins. They were still only able to get six votes. Senators should rest assured that the events of January 6 will be investigated and that as Majority Leader, I reserve the right to force the Senate to vote on the bill again at the appropriate time.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, a news conference in which he also outlined several agenda items when the Senate returns this session after a week off for the Memorial Day holiday. And on that list, a voting rights bill, which an article in TheHill.com notes sets the stage for a high-profile clash over the filibuster. Former Republican Speaker of the House Paul Ryan gave a speech about the future of the Republican Party on Thursday night at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California. Ryan's hometown paper, the Milwaukee Journal Constitution, writes, acknowledging that conservatives find ourselves at a crossroads, Ryan sought to map out a vision for the Republican Party in the post-Donald Trump era. Ryan credited Trump for bringing many new voters into our party, but said Republicans have to face a reality. Here's a portion of former Speaker Ryan's speech.
Even for our good showing in the House, 2020 left Republicans powerless in Washington. Even worse, it was horrifying to see a presidency come to such a dishonorable and disgraceful end. So, once again, we conservatives find ourselves at a crossroads. And here's the reality that we have to face. If the conservative cause depends on the populist appeal of one personality or of second-rate imitations, then we're not going anywhere. Voters looking for Republican leaders want to see independents in metal. They will not be impressed by the sight of yes-men and flatterers flocking to Mar-a-Lago. We win majorities by directing our loyalty and respect to voters and by staying faithful to the conservative principles that unite us. This was true even when the person leading our movement was as impressive, polished, and agreeable as they come. Maybe you recall Ronald Reagan's parting words in the proper farewell address of a successful two-term president. Here is how he acknowledged his reputation as a great communicator. He said, quote, "I never thought it was my style or the words I used that made a difference. It was the content. I wasn't a great communicator, but I communicated great things, and they came from the heart of a great nation, from our experience, our wisdom, and our belief in the principles that have guided us for two centuries." Now, President Reagan might have been underrating his talents just a bit, but he was right, that leaders and eras, they come and go. It's only the cause that endures. That is critical to remember right now.
Paul Ryan, former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Thursday at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. He was also the Republican vice presidential nominee in 2012. Former President Donald Trump posting a response to Ryan today. It reads in part, "Paul Ryan has been a curse on the Republican Party. He has no clue as to what needs to be done for our country. Was a weak and ineffective leader and spends all of his time fighting Republicans as opposed to Democrats who are destroying our country. As a Republican, having Paul Ryan on your side almost guarantees a loss for both you, the party, and America itself." Part of the statement from former President Donald Trump. At the start of this Memorial Day weekend, President Joe Biden and Virginia Governor Ralph Northam getting together at a rock climbing gym in Alexandria, Virginia. Governor Northam speaking about the state's lifting all COVID-19 distancing and capacity restrictions at private businesses.
"Today, we mark a tremendous milestone in our fight against COVID-19. As of 12:01 this morning, for the first time since March 2020, there are no limits on capacity or distancing in Virginia's restaurants, businesses, offices, or other venues. That's something that we can all be proud of. We are closer to a more normal life than we have been in the past 14 months. And I don't know about for you, but for me, that feels really good. For this, we can thank the vaccines and the scientists and researchers who developed them. We are now roughly 6 months into the vaccine rollout, and I'm proud to say that 66% of Virginia adults have had their first shot. 54%, more than half of Virginians, are fully vaccinated, which puts us 14th amongst all states and ahead of other states in the South. Those are tremendous numbers, and I'm fully confident that Virginia will hit President Biden's goal of 70% of adults getting their first shot by July the 4th. We can see, yes.
Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, who is also a pediatric neurologist. He was followed today in Alexandria, Virginia, by President Joe Biden, who hailed the progress the country is making towards ending the coronavirus pandemic and allowing the economy to fully recover.
But folks, look, in Norfolk and Fredericksburg, fans are heading back to the minor league ballparks. Pools and parks are opening up across the state. Families are heading down to spend Memorial Day weekend at Virginia Beach, and all over the country, we've gone from pain and stagnation of a long, dark winter to an economy on the move, growing faster than it has in nearly 40 years. From anemic job creation in the months before I took office to the fastest job creation in the first 3 months of any administration in American history, and rising wages, rising wages. As more Americans get vaccinated, the days grow brighter and brighter. But let me be clear, we're not done yet. We have to reach those who are not vaccinated and make it as easy as possible for them to get protected. I set an ambitious goal of getting 70% of adult Americans at least one shot by July the 4th. Today, just over a month to go, we're at 62%. 10 states have already reached the 70% milestone. Virginia's 66 is moving closer every day. And continuing on all, counting on just all the help and continuing this process is really, I think you're going to get the job done here in Virginia pretty quickly, Gov. To hit 70% and keep sprinting through the finish line is what we're all about. If we succeed, we can celebrate our independence from the virus together on the 4th of July as we celebrate our independence as a nation. And the future is only going to get brighter because there will be no doubt what America can achieve when we do it together. I know when I ran for office, I said I wanted to do three things, one of which was to unite the country. It's difficult, but this is the first real evidence that we're able to do it. The American people are more ready to come together, I believe, than the Congress and the elected officials are. But we're getting there.
President Joe Biden today in Alexandria, Virginia, right across the river from Washington, D.C. He and First Lady Jill Biden later traveling to Hampton Roads, Virginia, to speak at Joint Base Langley-Eustis. With many states lifting COVID restrictions, travel this Memorial Day weekend expected to be much busier than last year. As the lockdowns were getting underway, travel by car, train, and plane, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was asked on ABC's Good Morning America if the Transportation Security Administration is ready for the increase in air passenger numbers.
Mr. Mayorkas, with more than 2.5 million Americans expected to fly this holiday weekend, is the TSA ready for this spike, or should travelers expect long lines and longer delays?
Good morning, Michael. We're very excited about the reemergence of travel, the chance for Americans to reunite with family and friends whom they haven't seen for some time. Oh, TSA is ready. We have really focused on a hiring surge, so we're ready for the reemergence of travel, summer travel, and of course, the Memorial Day travel. People will see lines because, you know, there's going to be a tremendous amount of people traveling this weekend, but patience is required. This is a partnership between TSA and the people we serve.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 64, NASDAQ up 12, and S&P up 3. A survey of corporate CEO compensation by AP and Equilar finds median pay for an S&P 500 company head $12.7 million in 2020. That's a 5% increase from the year before. Survey also finds, of the 342 CEOs who were surveyed, 16 are women. That's down from 20 a year earlier. And their median pay in 2020 actually fell 2%. U.S. Postal Service raising the price of a first-class stamp from 55 to 58 cents. Rates on magazine mailings and bulk mail also going up this summer. The Washington Post reports it's the latest installment of Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's plan to erase a projected $160 billion in liabilities over the next decade. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention revising earlier COVID guidelines for summer camps, now saying camps where everyone has been fully vaccinated, masks and physical distancing not necessary, except where required by local law. Washington Today continues in a minute. And welcome back to Washington Today, which is available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Listen and follow. A little bit more about that $200 billion bill on science and technology investment that the Senate has been considering. We mentioned at the top of the program that senators were in session until early Friday morning, actually 3 a.m. Eastern, debating amendments. Republicans threatening to continue the debate into the Memorial Day weekend. And then a deal was reached to put off completion of that bill for a week and instead vote on the January 6th commission bill. But before the deal was announced, this is what happened on the Senate floor, starting with the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer.
So in a moment, the Senate will resume business. A few of our Republican colleagues may continue their speeches. The Senate spent two hard weeks at work on this bill many months before that. We have every intention of sticking it out through until the job is done, and that's what we're going to do. I look forward to passing this historic and extremely bipartisan bill later today.
Chuck Schumer, Majority Leader, Democrat. Republican Senator Mike Lee followed by explaining why he and some other Republicans were pushing for more time and amendments on this bill.
What I and a number of my colleagues have been focused on as we've debated this through the night and starting early this morning when we reconvened, has been simple. We just want more time before being asked to vote on this measure. It's not an unreasonable request, given that you're dealing with legislation that's over 2,000 pages long and that's likely to cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $250 billion. That is a lot of money, and the way in which we spend it will undoubtedly have profound implications, not just for years, but for decades to come. We need to, we ought to, we really must endeavor to understand what exactly this is going to do. In order to do that, we've got to have text, and that does, in fact, matter. So it's not something that you can easily dismiss as an argument that says, this has been regular order because it's been on the Senate floor for 2 weeks. When it changes as much as this one has, it expands as much as this one has. When it's as long as this one is and involves this amount of money and this many very significant far-reaching ramifications, it is not unreasonable for us to want more time to vote on it, to consider it, to seek public input. And to allow the American people to know what's in it before we cast our votes. That is a simple common courtesy that we ought to have extended to ourselves automatically, rather than trying to rush to a final vote in the dark of night.
Republican Senator Mike Lee on the Senate floor. Again, later in the day, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announcing that he and the Republicans had reached a deal. They're going to finish up this bill when the Senate returns from its week-long Memorial Day break. Commencement day at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. Vice President Kamala Harris was the graduation speaker, first woman in history to do that. She told the midshipmen that the nation faced new global threats, including cybersecurity, climate change, and COVID-19. In fact, she called the coronavirus pandemic a significant turning point in history. She included on that list the 1929 stock market crash, 1941 Pearl Harbor attack that got the U.S. into World War II, 1964 when the Civil Rights Act passed, 1989 the Berlin Wall falling, ending the Cold War with the Soviet Union, and 2001 the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Here is Vice President Kamala Harris talking about the significance of the post-coronavirus pandemic world.
We are now entering the next era, a new age, a new epoch, with its own tests, with its own challenges, and with its own opportunities. The global pandemic, you see, of course, has accelerated what was happening before, and it has accelerated our world into a new era. It has forever impacted our world. It has forever influenced our perspective. And if we weren't clear before, we know now, our world is interconnected. Our world is interdependent. And our world is fragile. Just think, a deadly pandemic can spread throughout the globe in just a matter of months. A gang of hackers can disrupt the fuel supply of a whole seaboard. One country's carbon emissions can threaten the sustainability of the whole Earth. This, midshipman, is the era we are in, and it is unlike any era that came before. So the challenge now, the challenge before us now, is how to mount a modern defense to these modern threats.
Vice President Kamala Harris giving the commencement address at the U.S. Naval Academy. This class included 786 new Navy ensigns, 274 Marine Corps second lieutenants. The current Supreme Court term is a couple of weeks away from ending, a time when, if justices plan to retire, usually announce their intentions. There's been a lot of speculation about Justice Stephen Breyer. He's 82 years old, been on the court since 1994, longest current serving justice nominated by a Democratic president. Today, Justice Breyer took part in a discussion hosted by the National Constitution Center on civil discourse in the courts, and he was asked to reflect on his nearly three decades as a justice.
It's fascinating to hear you say at the beginning you weren't quite sure you could do it, but then you got confidence that you could, and yet
I wouldn't put it that way. You get confidence you can do it as well as you can do it.
Well, you're doing it extremely well, but at the same time, I hear you say that humility is important, is it?
I mean, humility is a dangerous word. I mean, what is it? I would call it character. Try to keep a decent character. That's also corny. And the only one who will know whether you're trying your best to keep your character, to be a decent character, you. No one else. You know, some newspaper writes, what a brave decision. It would have been brave to do the opposite. You know, I mean, that's, people will tend to agree with you. They'll say, yes, that's right. But be careful of that. Remember, I mean, you and a few friends maybe and people you trust tell you the truth.
Justice Holmes used to say he learned that he wasn't God. Well, what's the danger? Did you come to think you're God?
You don't come to think you're God, but you just tend to think, I think it, so it must be right. Yeah. Stay away. Keep, somebody says a compliment. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Look, I learned after about 3-4 years, we were at some kind of an event here in the court with young lawyers. And two came up and said, Justice Breyer, would you ever sign my program? And I just really think your opinions are wonderful. They're so good. I really like them. So I said, of course I will sign your program. So I signed his program. And as he walked away, he turned to his friend, thinking I was out of hearing, and he said, that makes four.
That will teach you humility. What else have you learned during your decades on the court?
Court is a, what have I learned? I don't know. I've probably learned a lot of things. I've learned a lot of things. I've learned that I have less power to persuade people than I thought I might. I've learned that The best you can do is you do your best. The interest of this job is that you have to sort of put out your best all the time. You the cases are interesting and difficult. They matter to people. Don't let up. And there you are. And as you get older, you think that's a very big virtue, a very big virtue. Because we have what we have, all of us, whatever it is, everybody has something. And to be in a situation where you have to use that something, really, you hope for the benefit of other people, that is a privilege. That is a privilege.
Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, a conversation today with National Constitution Center President and CEO Jeffrey Rosen. Thanks for joining us on Washington Today, available as a podcast. Listen and follow where you get your podcasts. And remember, the free C-SPAN radio app lets you take C-SPAN with you wherever you go. Not only the audio stream of C-SPAN radio, but the audio of the three C-SPAN TV networks. Hope you have a good night and a good weekend.